No fancy intro this week. We just watched American Fright Fest, a movie that has an insanely high body count. We watched it so you don't have to, so you know what time it is. What's up, Moon Goons? Welcome to Horrible Horror, the podcast where we watch the worst of the worst in horror movies. I'm your host, Mr. Marshall Hampton. Normally, my co-host, Mr. Aaron Southworth, would be here, but he is out of the country right now. He is out exploring his Viking heritage. He's taking in the Iceland right now, the Reykjavik. He's getting all, you know, ice Viking-esque. I don't know, whatever. Fuck it. He's been gone. He'll be back next week. But sitting in with him is, you know, a friend of the show, basically my third host for the most part, Mr. Chris Samples is back.
What's up, buddy?
Hey! It's always a pleasure to have Chris sit in.
Oh, well, thank you.
With or without Aaron. It's always a fun time.
Pleasure to be here, my friend.
I'm glad to hear that. And Chris, one thing I love about Chris is he always brings beer with him.
Always.
Always brings a nice case of that cool silver bullet.
There you go.
That we love so much.
Hey, a guest cannot show up empty-handed.
That's kind of a rule of thumb.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This is my rule anyway.
I like your rule. I like it. We don't have a lot. Let's see. Aaron, what would Aaron Dorn do? He would plug, before we get started, he'd plug off our crap. So you can check us out on our website at horriblehorrorpodcast.com, along with our Instagram and Twitter, which is at So Bad It's Scary. You can also download and listen to all of our episodes on iTunes, Google Play, iHeartRadio, Podbean, and our website also. Now, if any of you newer listeners or anybody who wants to go back and look for our older episodes, the archive stuff, those you can find on our Podbean and on our website. For some reason, iTunes will only do our most recent, I think, 100 or something like that.
Really?
We can only bank 100 or anything.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
The older stuff starts getting taken off as we add newer stuff.
Yeah.
So if you want any of the go back to older stuff, check out our website or Podbean. That's where you can find all the old original stuff. With that said, let's this week's movie, American Fright Fest. This movie, relatively fucking new. Like, it came out just in 2018. I don't have a month or a day exactly. The year. So it's pretty spanking new. Also, at some point, it's called just Fright Fest, and then at some point, they added American Fright Fest to it, so I don't know, but it's on Amazon Prime as American Fright Fest. It is not a freebie, though, like most of us have been lately. It is one you have to rent, but it's not expensive. It is what it is, but yeah, it's a rental.
Did you see the movie? I mean,
okay,
just checking.
Let's talk about the cast real quick. There are some interesting people to talk about. In here. First, let's talk about a cameo by Mercy Malick. She's got 80 credits, including the TV shows iZombie, Pretty Little Liars. She was in Dexter, and she's done voiceover work in Call of Duty, World War II, and World of Warcraft. She also does stunt work on the side, too, so she double dips there.
One of her credits I saw on IMDb, she was on James Corden as the contortionist.
Huh.
Did you notice that one at all?
No, I think I missed that one.
That's weird. If you look at her IMDb page,
yeah,
she's on a pole and she's like holding on to the pole with just her
thighs. Yeah,
you know what I mean? Kind of doing this point thing. Damn.
Okay, and then same. Yeah, I saw that picture. I remember that one. Let's see. The Mayor Fowler is played by. First of all, this movie. Before I get into cast, I forgot. It's written by Robert Gillings and directed by Ante. It's French, or not French, it's foreign. It's Ante Novakovic. So I don't know how you would pronounce
that.
You
play The Rock right now. It doesn't matter.
Doesn't fucking matter. But his brother, Kresh Novakovic, plays the mayor in this movie. We also have Luke Baines, who plays Mason. Now, the only reason I put him down is he played the serial killer in Wes Craven's last movie called The Girl in the Photograph. So he was in Wes Craven's very last movie where he played a serial killer.
And what character was he?
He's Mason.
So he's the...
Kind of like the main guy, I guess.
The guy from Nip Tuck or whatever.
No. We're coming up to him. Isn't that Mason? Rico in the movie is played by Romeo Miller. He's got 54 credits, including a movie called Little Dead Riding Hood. But he's probably most famous as being the oldest son of rap mogul Master P, and is better known by his rap name of Little Romeo.
Really?
Yeah, Little Romeo's all grown up now, and he's in this movie.
Is that who that was?
Yeah, the black guy. Okay. Yeah. Now, you were talking about our main guy, Spencer Crowe, played by Dylan Walsh. Right. He's 62 credits. He's most famous for Nip Tuck.
That's exactly. And lots and lots of TV.
He was also in the Stepfather remake. That was a horror movie he did. Right. Also, he was in Congo, The Lake House, and then
fucking Congo.
Yeah, fucking Congo. Too. Then he was in TV shows like Longmire, Law and Order, SVU, Unforgettable, and of course Nip Tuck. So that's the cast people we're gonna talk. That's really about all we're gonna talk about. Or mention. I'll bring up. We'll get to Mason. I don't want to get to him, give right. away before we get to him. But anyway, so let's jump to the movie. The movie itself, we open on the set of some, you know, horror movie where we meet the director of the movie, Spencer Crowe, who's, again, he's supposed to be like this Wes Craven, Eli Roth type of horror super director type person. Mm-hmm. And we also meet Crowe's assistant, Finkel, who's Finkel the Midget, and his leading lady, Audrey.
I totally thought that was Wee Man.
You did?
Which sounds completely insensitive. Yeah. I'm sure they don't all look the same. Yeah, they all look the same. But I was like, is that Wee Man? And I had to look it up real quick. I was like, oh, God, I feel like a dick, man.
Yeah, so we meet Finkel and his leading lady, the actress Audrey. Now we jump to a house in Somerton, Pennsylvania, where inside this older couple are sitting on a couch watching TV. In the bathroom, we see their son, who seems to be freaking out in front of the mirror and having some kind of mental breakdown or something. And then we see someone who we, at this point, are to assume is the son, mm-hmm. walk up behind the parents, behind the couch, with a shotgun and just blows their heads off. Just ba-bam, father's head explodes.
And that was an awesome, the way his head blew up.
Yeah, it was a pretty good effect. Cool effect. It was a solid effect, mm-hmm. Yeah, I will say. I did one thing I found kind of funny is I guess it's just the editing in this, but as soon as the he's not even done shooting his mother's head, but the cops mm-hmm. are already on the scene.
Right.
It's first shotgun blast, blam. Well, start hearing cops sirens, and then he kills the mom.
It was weird because there was three shotgun blasts.
Were there three?
Because he shoots the dad, and then you hear two more. Now I don't know, because they do a shoot from the outside.
Yeah,
and shot then you hear two more. So okay. I don't know if it was I assumed that it was three blasts, but why would you shoot the, maybe he missed mom.
Yeah, make sure, I guess. Yeah, who knows. But I just saw this one, man, those cops have a hell of a good response time.
Right, because they're doing the zoom out of the house, and you hear this 911 call from the neighbor or something, and then suddenly, boom.
Cops are already there. Yeah. Now we roll the title credits, and we fast forward 11 months later, and we go to the son, who we just saw, his sentencing hearing, and he's pleading his case that someone else was in the house and that he tried to save his parents. This is where he found the son's name. This is Mason.
Okay.
And he gets sentenced to a maximum security mental hospital / prison. Let's clear this up right now. This movie is very fast paced. Mm-hmm. It's one thing that does have going for it is there's not a lot of downtime or filler. It gets going and stays going, so there's gonna be a lot of jumping around. There's a scene go real fast, and we jump back and forth pretty quickly, so it might get a little confusing, but we'll do our best to try to make it as clear as possible. It
definitely is confusing.
So after the sentencing hearing, we go back to Spencer Crowe, who is doing blow while his agent tells him about this job offer to design and direct a town's fright fest. Uh-huh. And Crowe, who turns out is hurting for money and wants to reestablish his name and his career, he's kind of down. He's fine, fuck it, I'll do it. Right. I got nothing else.
Well, apparently he had just gotten arrested for his third DUI.
Yeah, something like that.
So he's got multitude of issues. So this is, if he does this fright fest thing, then to get him out of like.
Yeah, like he had some like some the judge or yeah, it was basically like, you know,
right.
You do community this or yeah, do thing. This or you're in more trouble or something.
Did you notice what movie he was watching too?
Shit.
He sits back and he's got like theater seating.
In yeah, you're no. What do you remember?
It's Not a Living Dead.
Was
dude.
It? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that was. I could have guessed that would be my first guess. The good.
See what horror movie can we put on there that we don't have to pay for?
Every single person ever does. Yeah.
I like picking that up though. It's one of my favorite Halloween movies.
Yeah. So now we jump to Mayor Fowler's press conference where he drops the Fright Fest news and declares how this town will become a yearly destination thanks to his Fright Fest, which will be held at the local. Old, currently shut down asylum, and that they have Spencer Crowe who's going to direct it and be in charge of.
What'd you think
thing.
Of this idea?
Not a good idea. Huh? Not a very good idea at all.
Because Somerton or whatever the place is, it seems like this very like you know small town,
yeah.
Very kind of you know quiet little community.
Yeah.
Hey, let's open a Fright Fest and bring in all these like. Unknowns, but, you know what I mean? Like all these crazy people that come to these fucking horror movies.
What I find it even funnier is like if you really want to break it down. Okay, but we find out you know this is like his election year, so he's trying to get reelected, and he's basing his whole campaign off of this idea that this Fright Fest is going to save this town's
Let's
economy,
bring in some sort of economic boost, to
a
this
thing
town.
That's basically seasonal for like 1 month.
Right.
1 month. Not even like a whole summer, but basically 1 month out of the year is going to save his whole town.
This dude is a fucking moron.
This guy should not be mayor in the first place.
No,
so he needs to go. So like,
this is your idea.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Not the gem I think you're looking for there.
No.
But now we jump another 3 weeks into the future, 3 weeks later, and we join up with Crowe, Finkel and three more of Crow's crew in their old asylum. This is where we meet the actors Rico, Aubrey, who we saw at the beginning, and some other girl whose name I don't know as of yet. Finkel mentions that they're still waiting on someone named Steph. I'm like, oh, okay, we're going to get joined by another girl, Steph.
Mm-hmm.
Crow drops a jump scare on this group, whatever. Steph shows up. Turns out Steph's a dude. So I've never heard of a guy named I've heard of Stefan, but never heard of a guy go by the name just Steph. Like that's weird.
Me neither.
Crow tells him that the mayor is forcing him to take this guided tour of the asylum, so they know like the story of it, and know the way around.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, Crow is like back, like you know, I'm done. Finkel, you take over, so I can go off and get drunk in the control room.
Pretty much,
that's what he does. We cut to Mason now. We go back to him being loaded up into a transportation van, bus, along several other inmates, including one who wears like the Hannibal Lecter face mask that keeps him from like, you know, spitting and biting.
But this one's like mesh.
Yeah, it's not like very plastic or metal. It's a very mesh one. They updated it, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so.
Now we go back to the asylum where the group meets up with Estelle, who dresses like an old librarian from like the local and she's from the local historical community committee. And Finkel introduces her as her tour guide. And even though Estelle is dressed like a Mormon librarian, you can tell she's like a slammy body underneath those clothes. But she talks in this weird voice.
She does have this like it's like not quite European, but it's kind of. It's a weird voice.
Yeah, it's a really weird accent. I'm not going to try to
replicate
it. Anyway, in the control room, Crow watches the group on the security cameras while drinking and snorting more
cocaine.
He's
got this whole setup in this control room. He's got multiple screens. He's got these little switches that he can do these jump scares with and like record everything as he's going on. So it's like in command central.
Yeah.
So
he is set up there. So he's just drinking, doing
with
more,
a case of beer and
case of beer and just
and
endless
water.
Amounts of drugs. Yeah. Like seriously, like endless amounts of drugs. This guy never runs out. He activates some more jump scares on the group. Estelle continues to lead them around the asylum, telling the group various ghost stories about the previous inmates and the evil doctors and all the horrors that went on here.
Well, the one story is pretty important though to the plot. She takes him into one.
It is, but it kind of isn't. Like
it's supposed to be.
It's supposed to be,
so
but
we should probably explain.
They don't.
That one,
right? Yeah, we will. But I'm just, the payoff is that they don't really 100% connect those dots or like say but they kind of make it seem like that. But yeah, they do. So the story I think is that.
Well, it goes.
Yeah, go ahead, Chris.
Okay. So the main psychiatrist of the asylum there and his wife had a baby.
Yes.
And apparently at a young age, the child like had murderous tendencies.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming it was going around killing rabbits and dogs and whatever. So they ended up locking the kid in the basement yeah. for like therapy or whatever. And then the wife got pregnant again and the doctor made her give it up for adoption. And then she ended up killing the psychiatrist over that, and then herself.
Yeah. And like, yeah, they really make a big point. That's the, like the one they hammer home the most.
Right.
But, I mean, I'll try to remember this at the end when we
and
get to the end.
And back when
but,
Mason was on trial a little bit ago, like the judge was like looking at adoption papers. He was looking at pictures from the crime scene and then also like some adoption papers.
Right.
So we're led to believe that Mason was adopted.
Yeah, exactly. They there's a lot, but they just by the end of the movie though they don't do a very good job of actually connecting all these dots.
Don't
you leave
have
a
to
lot.
Spoil it for everybody. Yeah.
where were
so we? With this story, then they move on.
Yeah. The tour ends.
Yeah.
Crow rejoins the group, tells them that Estelle is actually just a girl he found on the adult back pages, and is one of many plants he's set up for tonight. Crow dismisses his group, and he and Estelle head out to this car where he gives her $20 for a quick blowjob. He finishes super fast, like instantly, basically. She collects her money. He's like, hey, can you get out and check my rear tire? I think it's a little low. She does, and as soon as she gets out of the car, boom, he drives off, leaving her.
Well, the blowjob was actually for her just to blow into his breathalyzer so he could start his car.
Oh, Jesus. Okay. Was that what it was? Yeah. I was like, God damn. I didn't hear anything about the breathalyzer or anything. Yeah. That's actually hilarious.
Yeah.
That's
He's like,
funny.
You want to make a quick tunny? And she like bends down like she's going to blow him. And she just blows into the breathalyzer so that he can start his car.
Okay.
And then he asked her if she wants to make another quick 20.
Yeah, and then
and she's like,
no.
Nah. He's like, it's worth a shot. And then that's when he asked her to go check the rear tire. And
okay.
He just fucking drives off and leaves
that's,
her ass.
I totally missed the breath lighter thing. That's actually funny. Yeah. That's hilarious. I'll give the film credit, the writer's credit for that. That's hilarious. That's great. So
look at me.
Look at you.
Picking up things, Marshall.
Yeah,
that's
see, that's what that's why I like. You always pick up stuff.
That is rare.
We cut to the transportation van filled with the criminally insane, along with shots of Crow drinking and driving. Now, of course, we see where this is going. Crow nearly runs head on into the transportation van, causing the van to swerve off the road, crash into a tree. Crow basically like hightails it out of there. He flees the scene. Everyone in the van seems dead except for one of the guards and the inmate with the face mask, the Hannibal Lecter mask. The inmate kills the guard. And uses the guard's key to free himself, and he just walks off into the woods. He's gone. Mm-hmm. Now we go back to the asylum. The Fright Fest is about to have its official grand opening to this large crowd gathered outside. The mayor's there shaking hands
He's
with everyone.
The front fucking shaking hands. Welcome everybody.
Yeah,
in.
It's like some political gathering or political event. No, it's like
fucking ridiculous.
Fucking haunted house opening. What?
Goddamn.
Like, I don't know. I don't think the mayor of St. Louis goes to the opening of like the darkness every year and says, hey guys, how you doing? Let me shake hands. Yeah. You have a baby for me to kiss? Hey. Like, it's so retarded in premise.
It
really
was ridiculous.
Think about
I'm
it.
Like, oh my God.
But we also learned that the mayor is going to be a major part of one of the scares later on tonight, that he's going to be in the scene where he receives electroshock therapy. So you kind of know where that's going. Mm-hmm. Crow pulls up to the asylum, and he has Finkel carrying his case of beer for him. Mm-hmm. At the same time, Mason, he wakes up back in the van. He wakes up in the van, surrounded by all the dead inmates, and he too uses the dead guard's keys to free himself, and he wanders off as well. The mayor meets up with Crow in the control room. They talk briefly about some shit, and basically the mayor threatens Crow by saying, you better pull this off, this better be good, or I'm going to have a little chat with the judge and make sure, you're getting more trouble or some crap like that. And that's the scene. He leaves. So
Mayor tough guy there.
Yeah, exactly. Mayor tough guy. Then we go back to the inmate one. He finds his way to the asylum and is told by the doorman/ticket taker, who thinks that the inmate is part of the crew Because he's wearing like the orange jumpsuit, so he thinks he's part of, like, you
orange
know,
orange jumpsuit covered in blood. Oh, you must be part of the show.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you're supposed to be around back. Use the employee entrance.
Yeah.
And so the doorman takes him around back, leads him to the back doors. Now Mason shows up too, walks right past the cop, by the way, just right past the cop and into the crowd gathered outside the asylum. The doorman tells the inmate that about the secret tunnels that lead to an exit. And he takes the inmate into the back locker room area and he leaves. Like, here you go. You can change whatever. Why would you say here, take that? You can change whatever. If you already think he's in the show and he's wearing his costume. It,
right.
That's bad. That doesn't make sense. We jump to Aubrey, the blonde girl, and the other girl, and they're in the girls' changing room. Man, that's a lot of girls in that sentence. they're getting ready, and they're going through the various costumes. Rico tries to scare him by leaping out from the costume rack with wearing like a monkey mask or something, but he gets a quick kick in the balls for his effort.
Yes, he does.
Finkel enters, takes all their cell phones, and puts them in a lockbox.
Well, only after they'll have a good joke because one of the girls is like recording it.
Yeah.
Like recorded the other girl like kicking him in the nuts.
Yes.
And then they all laugh about it. And then over the intercom or whatever, that's when.
Yeah, Crow's like, he's like, Crow orders everybody to put all their cell phones in this lockbox.
Even the crew, that's weird.
Yeah, it's weird. He's spying on the girls from his on a screen mounters anyway as they're in their brawls and all that right. stuff. He's being pervy. Finkel brings the lockbox to the control room and then goes off to prep the first act of the live horror event.
Not after Crow makes him open his beer.
Yeah.
Like the entire time, the joke is that he makes Finkel open every one of his beers.
Yeah, he calls him up to control room, I think at least two or three times just to open the beer for him, which is kind of funny. So outside, another doorman spots Mason, and he too quickly, like, get your ass in. He too is ushered quickly inside the building. Next, we see some guy with a badge on his shirt. Like, I guess he's supposed to be a security guard, but it's just like a blue navy polo with like a little badge pinned to it.
I think it's
or
a polo, man. I think it's like a just like a regular T-shirt.
Was it, something, yeah. But
either
just
way,
it's just a
yeah, it's like
plain
a
shirt with a
just, like a star emblem on.
Yeah, just stuck to the shirt. he enters the changing room. He finds one of the girls' black thong on the floor. He picks up and takes a giant, deep whiff of it. In enters inmate one. The weird the guy with the badge pockets the thong in his jeans pocket.
Yeah, real inconspicuous.
Yeah,
like, oh, I didn't know anybody was here.
Yeah, I'm just gonna take this
in my pocket. What a sleazeball!
Yeah, true sleazeball. The inmate grabs the guy and just repeatedly headbutts the shit out of this guy. Just bam, 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 fast headbutts. He knocks him down and they're just. Beats this shit out of this guy like without mercy.
Yeah, beats him to death.
That's what he just beats this guy to death.
I think that's a first, like headbutt to death.
Yeah, it's pretty close. It might. Yeah,
I don't think I've ever seen that one.
He's
awesome.
Beaten. Now he finds himself the inmate. Now he's in some other room where he sits on his old metal bed frame. And finds an old baby rattle toy on the floor for some reason. And he starts to have flashbacks of being tortured by orderlies, I think. Mm-hmm. And he also finds a mask, like, in the wall, which I thought was really weird. Like, well, I didn't find...
I think this is where it goes back to the story. Which, again, they don't do a good job at putting this together.
Yeah, I found
but
it there,
but the
mask threw me off.
But if you go back to the story of the... that I told about, you know, the head psychiatrist and his... wife, whatever, and then
right.
put the kid in the basement. I think he's in the basement. I think he's having flashbacks of being there.
That's what I thought too. Like,
the kid.
That's what I thought. But the fact that when he finds this Halloween mask in
it's,
the wall,
it's in
like
a cinder block or something.
Yeah, but it's like why? And it's not a kid's mask. It's a full size adult mask. Which that's
but
what throws me off.
If you look at it, if you look at it, it looks like almost a skinned face. So maybe the only thing I could think is maybe he made that mask and hid it there.
Again, but if he was a kid.
I know, but we don't know how old he was at the time. We don't know, you know what I'm
saying? Yeah, it's really, this is where it gets fucking confusing. They don't connect the dots.
They don't connect the dots.
I kind of made that assumption you did,
right.
But at the same time, I was like, is this really
what
it is?
That's the only thing I could think to justify it.
Right. So I guess that's what we're going with then. We'll go with that theory.
If you don't like it, you can let us know.
And, watch the movie yourself.
Watch the movie and we can talk about it.
We go back to Crow. He's in the control room watching all the monitors, continuing to drink and do more blow. Finkel is touching up Aubrey's tits, getting her ready for her big scene, like pushing him up and getting him all plump and ready. And this is where he gets called back to the control room to open up another beer as Aubrey readies herself for her big scene.
He says something like, "Keep your hands off the talent. That's my job."
Yes, that's it. Good call. Yeah, this place. Just opens beer. And as soon as he comes in, opens the beer, and he leaves again.
I love how his beer is like, it's just a black can that says beer.
It's the emotion. Like, I've seen, this movie doesn't look bad. The budget isn't, but you would think they get like a little better, like, generic beer can.
It's almost as like, remember, it's not as bad as, what was that, Killer Bong, where it was obviously Coors Light.
Yeah.
But they just put a piece of like
black tape, over, tape yes. over it. Yeah, yeah. It's months of, but it's, you would think they could just get like a better fake generic beer. There's a black can that says beer on it.
Yeah.
It's so
I thought that too. I was like, man, really? Can't get some sort of a sponsor?
Yeah.
You know?
Now we see the inmate. He's getting all geared up. You know, he's wearing now this thick black apron, dirty brown shirt. He has this large axe that's kind of swung over his back. And he pulls on
got like a proper like harness.
Yeah, like,
for his axe on his
back.
Exactly.
It's like a sword.
A chainsaw and the big ass rubber gloves.
Yeah, he pulls on the scare mask, and basically at this point he kind of looks like he kind of looks like somebody who would be working in Hostel. Remember the guys in the Hostel movie? They all the people who did the killing in the rooms. Right. Well, if you ever see the movie. They all wear these kind of same outfits. Like, they all have black aprons and these clothes and the gloves to do, you know. And he kind of looks like that. Like, he came from the Hostel movie. We go back to Aubrey, who's standing like a mannequin. And a group of people enter her room, including the mayor and his campaign manager, Lackey, who we've seen a few times already. Entering from a different door, now with a working chainsaw, is the inmate. He sets the chainsaw down when he sees Aubrey, walks up to her. She whispers to him, "You're supposed to be in the psychiatrist's outfit. What are you doing?" And he starts whispering back to her that, you know, she's so beautiful, just like his mother. Confused, she tells him, "Just, you know what the fuck are you doing? Just throw me against the wall like we rehearsed." And now the inmate begins to run his hands over Aubrey, asking her to touch him like mommy used to. He then grabs her, pulls her close to him, then rips open her dress, rips off her bra. At this point, Aubrey begins to freak out. She's yelling out for help, saying this isn't part of the show. But of course, all the people watching just stand there thinking it is part of the show. The inmate lifts her off the ground by the throat with one fucking hand. Fucking hate that.
No, come on. It's got the force, dude.
She begs for help, saying, "He's going to kill me." The inmate says to her, "Tell everyone what it's like to die." With that, he crushes her throat in his hand, turns to the crowd, looks at them, and then exits the room as the crowd begins to applaud like a slow clap. And
I kind of liked it. I don't know.
What
I didn't like, though, did you notice that when he ripped open her bra, we saw no nipple? I saw no nipple. I don't think she has any nipples. Or else she has like pasties over it, which is weird. I mean,
come on. She could have had pasties, or I don't know, maybe. I'm surprised I didn't notice this.
I'm surprised,
being a boob connoisseur. But I was like, maybe, just maybe.
Because that was the only boobs we got.
Kind of rips the bra. Maybe, did he rip the bra off completely? Yes. Or was it just kind of like.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Then,
there's no nipple.
That's odd.
It's very odd.
That's very odd. Anyway,
I like the kill.
I didn't mind the kill. I just hate the. I always hate it. I always said it. And I still stand by it. I hate the fucking. Picking somebody up with one hand by the neck is.
Did he have her totally off the ground? She was kind of sitting on a desk, maybe.
He had her above his head.
Off the ground.
One handed.
And it snapped her neck.
And it crushes her throat with one hand. Like, fuck you. He's not Jason Voorhees. He's not supernatural paranormal. He's just a dude.
I agree.
And I fucking hate that shit.
Yep.
Anyway, crowd applause. The killer just walks out of the room, goes about his business. We cut to the mayor and his lackey and Finkel entering the control room. Crow goes into damage control / spin mode. He rattles off a series of excuses for what just happened and promises that it won't happen again. And he then tells the mayor, "Hey, you know what? It's time for you to go get ready for your scene." And he kind of like gets them out of the room. And at this point, apparently, Audrey's name is really Maxine, and I've been using the wrong name this whole time, but fuck it, it doesn't matter because she's dead now anyway. But I was like, where right. the hell? I know I heard Aubrey at the beginning of the movie. Now it's Maxine. Where did this happen? Doesn't fucking matter.
Well, there was two blondes in the
There are two blondes. So. As they usher the mayor out of the room, we can see how pumped and excited Finko and Crow are about how scary and great everything's going. Like, oh, this is awesome. Right.
We're back.
Yeah, exactly. We cut back to the inmate, the killer, who comes across some random event staff member. He's just wearing like a shirt that says staff on or something like that. Kills them by stabbing the man up through the underjaw area with like a large knife or something. Yeah, large knife. And then he pulls the knife out and slashes open the man's, this rips the man's stomach open.
Yeah.
This was a good kill. It was pretty solid, but it was so fast and rammed. He just like walked, bumped in the guy and like, kill.
Well, it was like, I was confused about what this whole Fright Fest thing was. Is this just like a haunted house where you go in and you go out, or are you kind of locked in?
I think it was, I think it was supposed to be a go in, go out thing, not a lock in thing. Because
he says something to him like, you know, you got to stay inside. You can't leave or something like that, doesn't he?
But that might have been, he might have been saying that not to like the paint painter, but to the worker, say, hey, you're working. You can't leave. You got to stay in your working area. Maybe. Or, you know, or maybe you got to stay within the predetermined area, the asylum, not wander off. Yeah, I get your point on that one. But yeah, he kills the guy. He's dead. Time passes, and we go from that to we see a cop get killed by the inmate, who then somehow blows up the cop car. Just you don't see how. It's like the cop's dead, and then the car just blows up.
Yeah, what was that?
And you get like the action movie slow motion shot of the killer walking away from the with the fiery explosion behind him.
Is this a flashback or what is happening?
It's like that
right
Michael
now.
Bay, John Woo fucking action movie shot.
Yeah,
I expect to see like Sylvester Stallone, like some Expendables drop out. Like, what's going on?
And how did he blow up the car? To avenge his past.
And how does he blow the car up?
I don't know.
It's just he kills a cop and then boom.
Right.
Just blows up a fucking car.
That's a good point. How did that happen? And what did that mean?
And the fact that nobody seems to react to hearing a car explode. Like it's not like the car's it's right across the street.
Right.
I mean, it's right outside this building.
I don't even remember seeing him walk to the car.
Yeah, you never see him leave the building or come back. He just kills the event staff. Next thing you know, he's outside killing a cop and a car blows up.
Yeah.
It's fucking insane. Back in the asylum, we see the killer dragging another body off screen. We see that he set up some barricades using several of the old metal bed frames. And this is why I say it's an in and out thing, because he blocks off all the exits. So I think they were supposed to be able to leave.
Okay.
But he traps everybody
inside.
So he put
those up? I assume that those were already up.
No, he puts those up.
Okay.
And that's what I got from him again. Maybe they were set, but I got the fact
that he set them
up. I thought
they were already there. There was like the chain. You're talking about when he chains it shut, right? And he's like, you know, no one can go out.
Yeah. He put all these metal bed frames together, blocking the door, and then chained them locked. Right. I assumed he did it, but you remember maybe they were already blocked
maybe
up.
Maybe they're already there. I don't know.
But, and then we see he attaches a jumper cable to the metal frame, turning the barricade into an electrified death trap.
Yeah.
Where the jumper cable comes from, I don't know. And where the power source for that jumper cable is, I don't know, because we don't see a car battery or anything.
Oh. He took the car battery out of the cop car, and that's how. I'm joking. I don't really know.
Honestly, that would make complete sense before he blew it up. I'm about to say, oh my God, you might blew my mind. But like,
do you think that would have enough power to electrify the fucking fence?
I don't know. But I wouldn't. At least they would have done that. I'd be like, oh, that makes sense.
I think a car battery would be like, ooh. You know, not like, you know,
who knows? I don't want, I honestly don't know. I don't want to really try to find out either.
Didn't that happen in Lethal Weapon?
I know they, like, you know, torch would be like electrocuting with a, attach a person to
sponges, right? And
the
car battery.
Car battery.
I don't know what that was.
But yeah, but then you're I don't know. I still don't want to find out I don't want to test it out.
No, I'd rather not.
But I wish he would have shown like carrying your car battery off. That would make sense, but they don't show that. He just walks away from the car with his axe in hand and like a fucking action hero.
I can't imagine it being like putting one of those 9 volts to your tongue.
Yeah, I can't. I'm sure it's a lot worse than that.
Yeah, but you're probably right. I mean, we'd try it if you want to.
No, it's okay. So, I don't know where the jumper cable is getting its power from. But, and then the killer just goes about locking or jamming all the other exit doors, and then he just returns to his killing spree.
Right.
He kills another woman dressed up as a nurse right in front of Mason, who's watching through a window, and the two of them lock eyes for a moment. And then we cut to the mayor strapped to this inverted table. The killer is standing next to him, acting like an executioner. Mm-hmm. The mayor, of course, still thinks this is all part of the Fright Fest act. A crowd of people enter the room while all the other people in the attraction are able to watch this on like various TVs that are hanging around the place, which I thought was also very odd.
I thought that was odd, too. Like, and I was wondering, why are there that many people in that haunt at one time? Which is why I was thinking, is this a lock-in situation? Like, you pay a ticket, you go in for the night.
Yeah, I see what you're saying, but
you know,
but the way they were doing it is like by scenes, like, you know, you have to, you know, like, true. Oh, here's the room one, and here, you have to usher him through a certain one, like a haunted house, and you set the scenes.
But they never really reset the scene. Yeah.
Well, they don't get a chance to reset, but yeah. I think that's what it was. And then the people, I just found it weird, like I've never been to a haunted house where they have TVs around, and all of a sudden you start watching one of the other rooms in the middle of the hallway all of a sudden.
That was really weird, too.
And
why are all those people congested in one spot watching this particular thing?
I mean, it's a big enough building. You have like group A and like, you know, in like 20, yeah. Group A goes first and then 5 minutes later, group B goes. And
no,
then
right. I get it.
Five space. But
then everybody has to stop wherever they're at.
To watch the TV screen. Yeah.
Especially if it's a scene, then you would think the mayor would just be involved in that scene throughout the whole night.
Exactly. Well, maybe that's what it was supposed to. I don't know. Again, they don't do a very good job of explaining how this was supposed to work.
No, they do
anyway,
not.
So the mayor goes into his quote unquote last word speech, and the killer places the hood over the mayor's head and then places the metal shocky crown, whatever you want to call it, on the mayor's head.
He did not wet the sponge.
He flips the switch and electrocutes the mayor, whose head erupts into flames. Just poof. explodes into flames. The people clap, exit the room. The campaign manager lingers behind to check on the mayor. Really? You think? Uh-huh. The guy's head exploded in a fireball. Yeah. I'm pretty sure.
No, that's all part of the...
Yeah, that's normal. It's
special effects, dude. It's
cool. But the campaign manager, he gets grabbed by the killer, pulled off screen, never seen again.
Bye.
Realizing that something is seriously wrong now, Crow gets up, locks the door of the control room, and this goes back to the monitors to continue watching.
What a douche.
Exactly. Major
He's
douche.
Like, oh, fuck. Locks the goddamn door.
Locks the fucking doors.
Who's going to open his beer now?
Exactly. He has to open his own beer.
Fuck.
So, fucking A.
So much work.
So much work. Now we get some shots of the killer running around, killing random people with his axe. It's kind of like a mini montage. Just hack, hack, hack.
Like a lot of people.
A lot of people. The body count in this movie is insane. I wish I had the time, to go back and count each and every person, but I didn't have the time to do that.
No.
But it definitely has to. It's probably the highest body count of, I would imagine, all.
If anybody out there,
all
is,
the movies we've done,
you know, inclined to watch this movie,
with the exception of Jason X, this has to have the highest body count.
I would say, and if you want to count the body count, tweet Marshall so that he knows, because there is no way I was counting all that.
Yeah,
shit.
I wanted to, but I didn't have time.
There was a couple montages. It felt like
Mason runs up to a small group of people who are working as scarers, like they work in the house, tries to warn them about the killer, but they think he's just one of Spencer's plants like Estelle was.
Well, and this is the other blonde.
Yes, I believe it's the other blonde.
Yeah, and Steph. It's the Steph guy and the other blonde.
Yes, who I just call Candy Striper.
I didn't catch that at first. The first time I watched this, I was like, who? What? Now they're introducing this whole other cast of people?
Because they see him in costume, it's like you kind of forget.
Right.
Yeah, you see him. So yeah, it's Steph, and I just call her Candy Striper. That's
I never caught the name.
They don't listen. Mason runs off. One of the girls, Candy Striper, she starts looking around at all the dead bodies in the hallway that the killer has hacked up in this one room, saying how real this all looks. She bends down, picks up a severed arm, and that's when she realizes it's real.
Yeah.
And she starts screaming.
And there's like another brunette with him, too. I have no idea who she is.
Yeah, I think she comes in later, but yeah, you could be right. We jump to another random guy and girl who seem very scared, trying to find an exit. The killer emerges from the shadows behind him and brutally stabs the guy in the back of the head with like a giant knife. And, like, it's pretty vicious looking, too. It's like, yeah. All in the back of the head. Well, the girl just stands there screaming, and we cut away. The girl's never seen again. She's going to get killed. The group of workers we just saw, along with Finkel and Rico, are now gathered outside the control room, banging on the door, pleading with Crow to open up. Crow refuses and just hollers back at them that this is all part of the show. The killer pops up at the end of the hallway. The girls scream. Rico tries to break open the metal door, but he can't. So they all scatter, take off running. But for some dumbass reason, like I said, they scatter and they go down different hallways. I will say this. There is a pretty kind of good suspense building scene here of Crow and the killer standing on the opposite side of the same door listening for each other.
Mm-hmm.
But not hearing anything. The killer moves on and Crow goes back to the monitors. I did like that shot. I thought that was a pretty good shot.
Yeah, because he like sneaks up to the door. He's listening. He knows the killer is right outside the door.
Right.
And then, but the killer, I don't think.
Doesn't quite know if he's in there. And they show it like a split view. So you see the door and you see both of them at the same time. It's not like going back and forth. So it's pretty good. It's a good shot.
Mm-hmm.
The killer now enters a section of the attraction that's set up to be like a carnival, which is really weird. I thought, again, this really makes me question what the hell this place was supposed to be.
Yeah.
Now, here's my other question. It's a fright. Maybe this is what it is. Look at this. It's a fright fest. So let's compare it to maybe for us, for local people. Let's look into like Creepy World, mm-hmm. where it's several attractions in one spot.
Right.
Now, it could be this asylum is just so big. They have like the haunted house in this wing. And then this section is this and this. So it's like all these different things in one building just mm-hmm. kind of separate. So that could be what this is. Because I was like, who has a carnival in the middle of the haunted house where you have guy like where the customers actually come up and play a game to try to win a prize? It's, like it was really weird.
It's totally possible. But again, they don't break it down.
They do not.
So we're left to kind of just guess.
Exactly.
What the fuck? Why is this even here?
It's just I thought it's so weird.
It was almost like another way just to show the brutality of this killer.
Yeah.
I actually kind of like this kill. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I get what's coming up, but it's really odd. Like, it's a weird break in, like, I don't want to say in the kind of action, because it's been building, and, like, we have this flow going, this nice flow, and then all of a sudden, we're just in this weird carny section, like, and he's playing, like, a carnival game.
Yeah.
Like, the target where you shoot the ducks with a pellet gun or something like that. It's like, what the fuck is happening here?
There's a few scenarios in this movie where, like, they do a little comic relief almost type.
I guess, like, but
is this supposed to be a horror movie, or are we being...
Yeah, kinda... I don't know. Anyway, so the man working the carny shooting game, he's there, and he does, like, go, step right up, take your chance. And he's backed up by his female cohort who works with him. The man hands the killer the gun. The killer removes his mask, takes the gun, and proceeds to shoot every target. Perfect. Bullseye. Puts the gun down, reaches up to take the giant stuffed bunny prize hanging up, but the carny stops and saying, hey, you only got 9 out of the 10 needed. The killer pulls out a real gun, shoots another target, says 10, then grabs the carny, puts the gun to his head, and pulls the trigger, killing the carny. The carny's blood sprays
all over the
spray. It covers the giant stuffed bunny.
Yeah.
As the girl screams, the killer points the gun at the girl, pulls the trigger 3 times, plop, plop, this plop,
keeps,
but the empty. Gun's empty. Yeah. So it's just click, click,
which
click.
Is even more, like, terrorizing for that chick, because he's just, like, just keep going. Pulling the trigger, you know, but it's empty, and she's like, fuck, you know, and she's walking around pissing her pants.
He drops the gun, takes the bunny as the girl runs away. After a moment of looking at the bunny, he kind of, like, looks at this bunny for a while, he drops it, pulls out a machete, and walks off with purpose back to his killing spree.
I liked it.
I liked it too.
even though it made no sense.
It makes zero sense, but it's fun. We cut back to Steph and the candy striper. They're creeping through the asylum. He tells her that, hey, I was in the military. Don't worry. I got this. And that's when, from out of fucking nowhere, he just gets his fingers chopped off by the killer's machete through some bars. Wham, fingers gone.
Oh, I got military training. And he grabs his bar immediately. Boom, 3 fingers gone.
Gone. Dish. Mason, we cut to Mason, who runs up to the security desk, which is like behind glass and all this. He begs and pleads with the guard, trying to convince him that the killings are real. But of course, the guard's not buying it. A second guard enters the booth from a door. This guard recognizes Mason from the news as the kid who killed his family.
Right.
But before they can do anything about it, the door flings open with such force that it sends the second guard crashing into the wall face first. The killer enters, hacks both of them up with his axe, and Mason, but he, Mason like drops down below the glass with, below the eye line, so he's not seen. And the killer just hacks him up and leaves.
Well, then
no, he doesn't leave yet. Doesn't leave yet. Another group of haunt goers of customers, they enter the hallway behind Mason, who's hiding, like I said, below the sight line of the security booth. The killer pops up with one of the security guards' guns.
Well, and they say, we know you. They see Mason. The killer can't see Mason.
No, killer can't.
So they're like, we know you. We know what you did. And they're like going to like basically kill Mason.
Yes.
Like, you fucking killed your parents. We're going to take you out. That's when the killer jumps up. And through the glass, fires four shots and perfectly knocks out all four of those guys.
One shot, one kills all four of these people.
Seriously?
Yeah. Well, through the glass. We did just see him pinpoint, you know, basically.
I get it.
Yeah. But still, how is this fucking inmate such a goddamn arch?
You would at least need five shots. One for the glass, four for each. I mean, come on, man.
You could make an argument that the first bullet went through the glass and killed the closest person.
I guess.
I mean, it's just glass.
That seems unlikely.
I agree, but very unlikely, but it could happen. So this guy is basically a fucking Navy SEAL or something with this gun he's doing.
Yeah.
The killer shoots him all, and he leaves through the door he came in. Mason hops a desk, finds a shotgun, which he takes, and we cut away to Crow, who's going through his emergency first aid kit, which is filled with various drugs.
Right.
No bandages, no gauze, no alcohol, copious amounts of drugs.
I kind of like that first aid kit. He's like pulling out pills and all different types of pills.
He pulls out this baggie of shrooms, which he just begins to scarf down his handfuls.
And it's funny
because
it's like a piece of tape on it says shrooms.
Yeah. he's down these shrooms while watching the killer chase down random people in a hallway.
He just looks like he starts tripping out. He's like, this is awesome. You know?
Yeah. Now we get a slow motion montage of people running and getting killed while Moonlight Sonata plays in the background.
That's funny because even Sarah's like, is that Moonlight Sonata?
Yeah, it is Moonlight Sonata. That's one of my favorite pieces, actually. So we go back to Finkel, who's trying to keep his walkie-talkie from making noise to give away his position. He comes face to face, face to crotch with the killer, who is armed with a chainsaw. Finkel drops his walkie-talkie, runs. Luckily for him, another group of random people runs past in between him and the killer. So the killer, like, says, fuck it, chooses to go after the new random people instead, leaving Finkel alone for now. Mm-hmm. Crow starts looking around for his cell phone, can't find it, but he finds an old phone on the wall, but of course it doesn't work. The candy striper's tending to Steph's fucked up hand, wrapping it up, trying to stop the bleeding. She leaves him to go find gauze and any other medical stuff she can, and she does, and she returns to him. She gives him some pills, wraps his hand up some more.
Well, when she finds the gauze, she takes a couple pills.
Yes.
That she pulled out of her back pocket, right? So she finds the gauze.
Right.
She goes back to him. She starts like wrapping up his hand and then hands him some pills. And he's like, what are these? These aren't jerseys that aren't prescribed to you.
Yeah, I know. I
like, and she's like, and I'm like, judge me.
I'm like, in that situation, fucking, I don't care. Right. Like, just I'll take the pills.
Right.
I thought the same
comic
thing.
Comic relief kind of comes in a little bit, and I was like, okay.
She helps him back up, and they start trying to sneak off again. Meanwhile, this girl who's dressed as the prom queen is hiding behind a door. Mason, this is kind of a little hard to explain, but bear with me. She's hiding behind this one door. Mason comes in through, a door that faces her. So he can see her hiding behind this other door. Now the killer comes in through the door the girl's hiding behind. So she doesn't see the killer, but Mason does. So Mason picks up the shotgun, shoots at the killer.
Didn't he get the shotgun from the...
He got from the security, guard check. And the killer flees the room as Mason goes to help the girl. But how this girl doesn't get hit with buckshot is beyond me.
It's almost at this point that the killer is avoiding Mason.
Yeah, at this anytime
Mason shows up, the killer runs away.
No, not necessarily because the first time he locks eyes with Mason because he's killing people. And he looks at Mason. They're like, it's through a window or something. He's like, yeah, right. I see you. But he goes off. He's not running for you. He's like, I'm busy.
Right.
Well, and then in the guard booth,
he's avoiding him.
The guard booth, he never saw Mason. And then this time he's running because Mason has a fucking shotgun. So guards like, I'm out of here. You know, I'm not going to get shot. So I don't think he's really running for Mason. And if he's supposed to be, not a good job of making it seem just coincidence at this point in my mind. Anyway, the girl should have gotten filled with buckshot from a shotgun, but she's okay.
He makes a point to say that, we got to kill him. We got to kill him.
Yeah.
It's weird because, I don't know, earlier on I kind of felt like that, you know, Mason almost had, a split personality. Like, he was both people. But he's not, obviously, It just felt like that's kind of what they were going for earlier on. And
I can kind of see where you're going with that.
You know what I mean?
I mean, there's definitely movies that have done that shit in the past.
Right.
Anyway, Prom Queen recognizes Mason from the news as well. Now we go into flashback mode as Mason tells his side of the story. And we go back to see Mason in the bathroom, standing from the mirror, and followed by the killer shooting his parents. The actual inmate killer. We see him doing it. Mason goes on to say some shit about being on the bus with the killer and knowing that he had to kill the killer before the killer killed him.
Yeah.
And he fills her in on the bus crash and tells her that killing the killer is their only way out of here. Mason takes her hand, leads her out of the room.
Marshall's having a hard time getting
over
his
own time right now. killer, yeah. Killing him, kill her. It's
a lot of confusing shit.
Yeah. Anyway, so we cut to Finkel finding Rico, changing out of his costume. So he's like, dude, I'm getting out of this costume, so I don't want to get confused for when the killer or for the psycho, which is smart. I'll give him credit for that. We see more random people screaming, running past in the background. Up runs some Hispanic dude who's like, dude, there's some shit going down this place. He runs off again and instantly gets got by the killer via the axe to the chest.
Yeah.
Just runs up, has one line, just gets killed immediately. We cut back to Crow, who's still downing more beer and drugs. Mm-hmm. He realizes that he's been recording every second of what's been happening outside the control room. And this is where he starts to go a little crazy here because he's all excited and he's like almost happy about this massacre. Because he believes he can use this footage to make the ultimate horror film experience and become a legend.
And he justifies it a plausible deniability or
something like that.
Yeah.
He even says one point, he's like, he's like, fuck Faces of Death or something like that. So he's getting all crazy and strung out. We jump back to Mason and the Prom Queen. They turn a corner, end up facing off against the killer, who's standing at the other end of the hall with a chainsaw. Prom Queen stops Mason from shooting the killer at first, saying that it might be Rico dressed up in costume. She shouts to the killer, hey, remove your mask so we can see who you are. But he doesn't and starts to walk towards him. That's when Mason's like, fuck it, shoots the killer. But again, the shotgun slugs hit the blade of the chainsaw perfectly. So the killer is fine. He drops the chainsaw, runs away. Again, this is a fucking shotgun.
I know.
This is a wide blasting. Some buckshot hit the chainsaw, but that killer is getting shot.
Yes.
Anyway, he runs off again. I actually have a note in there. I can't mention, I don't think the people who made this movie know how shotguns work. But
it was a slug, and then.
I mean, it's a buck. I mean, it's a big ass shotgun.
Well, I mean, a slug is it looks like a bullet, but. I don't know why a security guard would have slugs and not buckshot.
Well, if I just said slug, it could have been buckshot. Who knows? I mean, we don't really fully see. But either way, he's fired. There's no way that either that girl or the killer haven't gotten hit by something at this point.
This is not the only problem I have with this movie. So,
I'm sure it's not. We cut to Rico, who's squatting down against the wall near the electrified blockade. A group of three more random people run past him towards the barricade. Rico shouts out, warning them, but it's futile. All three of the people just get electrocuted to death. They just instantly run up, grab it.
Apparently that car battery works like a charm.
Yeah, they're dead. Now we go back to Steph and the Candy Striper. They enter the asylum's old chapel. She helps Steph to a pew, then asks him what his military training says about what to do in this type of situation. And that's when Steph admits that his quote-unquote military training was just a six-week-long boot camp workout that he did to get in shape for this job. By the way, the Candy Striper's clothes have changed now too. All of a sudden,
She ended up taking the Candy Striper dress off.
Did you see that?
Yeah, to help patch his hand.
I missed that thing because she was wearing his dress. Now she's not. Like, what happened to the dress?
She's in like the black spandex.
Yeah, or a black suit, shirt and jeans or something like that. Yeah, like what happened to that?
Okay, no, she took the dress off. The
wrap up. All right. Well, then I will cut them slack on that. I missed it. Mm-hmm. You saw, so good catch. They hear some sounds of someone approaching, and they hide amongst the pews. But it turns out just to be Mason and Prom Queen. Candy Striper gives Prom Queen some painkillers after accidentally hitting her in the foot with a hammer, thinking it was a killer.
I'm pretty sure it was a 2x4 with a nail through it. Was it? Fucking jammed through
her foot. It was something, yeah. She hits with something, yeah. Mason and Prom Queen try to tell the other two that they need to team up to take out the killer. But Steph isn't having any of that. He takes the shotgun from Mason and says that he and Candy Striper are getting the hell out of here. Mm-hmm. And with that, Steph leaves Candy Striper out of the chapel.
And he's going to shoot that shotgun with that two-fingered hand.
With his two-fingered hand, yeah.
How is he holding on to the said
that's
shotgun?
That's a great point. Unless he tries to fire left-handed and use the right arm for... Yeah, but that's a great point. I wish... I didn't even think about that.
That bitch is going to fucking ricochet right out of his hand.
Yeah, that's going
to go flying. He ain't
holding on to shit. Mason just kind of like... It was like, whatever. And he helps Prog Cream. And then he limps after they go after the other two. Steph and Candy Striper, or CS, I'm just gonna call it from here on out, find themselves in a hallway that has the blockade in it, the same one. As they approach, they get scared by Rico, who emerges from under a pile of dead bodies. He's like, "Hey, dude, chill. I'm just, you know, it's hiding here." Smart move. I can't blame me. That's a smart move. Rico warns Steph not to touch the bed frames. So Steph then looks up, shoots a power box that's hanging above the door. Sparks fly, the place is sent in the darkness, and the red emergency lights come on. Mm. Thinking it's safe, Steph says, "I'm getting this out of here." And then grabs the bed frame and gets his ass fried like some KFC original recipe. Yeah. He's done.
You've been holding on to that joke for a minute, haven't you?
Actually, I forgot I had that one. But I had to say, like, okay, which also made me question, what the fuck is this thing connected to?
I have no clue.
If the power goes out...
Dude, I already told you. Wait, I told you. That the car battery from the cop car.
But still, on, it's... But I think even at one point they show wires going up to this power box, which is
what he shot out.
Shout in blood, but now it's still electrocuted. Yeah.
No clue.
No fucking... It makes zero sense. Zero sense.
And on the other hand, now, okay, so when he shoots that out, the whole power in the whole building goes out.
You would... You're supposed to, but... So oh, wait, no, it does. Yeah, it does.
So then we go... It flashes right to...
The control room.
Right.
Where Crow gets pissed that the power's failing.
Because now he can't record his masterpiece.
Yes, it interrupts his recordings. He pulls out a flashlight, but he basically immediately finds a switch that turns the power right back
on. It's
on
the floor in a corner that makes absolutely no sense.
Yeah, like what fuse box is...
Who puts the emergency power down
in
underneath
a floor,
nothing?
In right. a corner. Like, I've never seen a switch on a floor.
In an old asylum.
Yeah.
That probably didn't really have great electricity in the first place.
Like, what does that switch actually would have worked? Like, that's so
can't explain
weird.
It.
Like, can't I want an electrician. Maybe an electrician out there can explain me what the fuck is going on with that light switch. Like, it's not even like,
there's no
it's not like a big, like, lever
that.
Heavy switch that you'd like,
right.
you see, like, in like, Frankenstein's lab. You're like, oh, turn the power. It's just like a fucking light switch he flips,
right.
and all the power's back on.
Yeah.
And it just happens to be like a 6 inches off the floor on the wall. Mm-hmm. It's like, what the hell?
Yeah.
So we go back to the others who are standing over Steph's body talking about what to do next. Mason picks up the shotgun and tells him, hey, they're going to go kill the monster. Finkel, we go to him now, who he finds the walkie-talkie, radios Crow. He tells Crow that he's going to make his way to the control room, but Crow's like, no, don't do that. I'm not opening the door for anyone. It's not safe. I'm not doing it. So Finkel's like, fine. at least open up the lockbox, use the cell phones to call the police. Crow's like, fine, but he can't find the key, so he smashes it, doesn't work, can't get the cell phones out. That's what we get. Basically, Crow now tells Finkel that he'll guide him out of the asylum using the security cameras and monitors as, you know, his eyes, and he'll guide him out. We go back to Rico, who tells the others that there's a secret passage in the chapel that they can use to get out.
Yeah.
We also learn here that Rico is Crow's drug dealer, which doesn't really fucking matter, but they drop that line of information in, so whatever. They all head off to the chapel now. Finkel is being guided through the various hallways by Crow, but unbeknownst to Finkel, Crow is actually leading him to the killer instead of away from him. The killer comes up from behind Finkel and does like this little hit and run tactic. He runs up and hits him with like the axe or a bat or something, and he kind of like dashes off into like this fog, because the room is filled with like fog from a fog machine or something like that.
Yeah.
And Finkel's like, Rails Crow's like, turn off the fog machine so I can see him, but he's like, And that's when Crow is like, I can't do that. This is my best work. And Finkel's like, oh, fuck you, mother. Like, yeah. He fixed on. He's like, and Crow's like, I think he's coming back for you, Finkel. You know, he's like toying with them.
What a douche.
Yeah. The killer walks straight up to Finkel, holding the axe. Finkel starts begging for his life. He offers to like pay off the killer. But the killer just swings his axe, and we see the blood splatter the wall.
More brutal, because he doesn't come at him with the blade end. He comes at him with like the other side of the blade, like the blunt end of the axe.
Is that what it was?
Yeah,
I missed that.
He actually takes the axe up and like twists it to where the blade is behind him, so he hits him.
Okay, I saw the quick flip of it, but I must have like looked. Like,
so hits him with like the blunt end of the axe.
Was it a blunt, or did it have like the little like hook, like fireman's?
No,
like,
it wasn't a fireman.
Didn't have the hook. No, yeah, okay. Yeah.
Like, oh, that's even worse.
We cut back to Crow watching on the Myers. He pours out some beer for Finkel. Like, yeah. Rest in peace. Pour it here. And then he just does a line of blow off the desk.
What a dick.
We cut to some other random girl. She's dressed up as a ballerina, mm-hmm. and she's sitting in a chair tied to a wall and crying.
Oh, this bitch, yeah.
The group, the other survivors, they enter the room. They find her. The prom queen approaches her, offering to help. But prom queen gets grabbed by the killer, who is lying in wait behind the door frame. He holds a knife to her throat and uses her as a human shield. Prom Queen shouts out to Mason to shoot the killer, so Mason fires but ends up killing Prom Queen instead. The killer once again runs off unhurt.
So third time's a charm?
Yeah.
You know, because he shot at her, shot close to her
he
once.
He finally hit
and
something.
Missed,
yeah.
Shot at the killer and hit the chainsaw.
Mm-hmm.
So this time he tries to shoot the killer and actually kills the girl?
Yeah, kills the girl.
And then this bitch over here.
But again, it's a fucking shotgun. What do you expect? You're not going to pinpoint like right between the eyes of the fucking shotgun.
Right.
So CS, she frees the ballerina while Rico and Mason argue about Mason shooting Prom Queen, and who Mason is like, she was dead already, because like I'm assuming he meant like the killer is going to kill her anyway.
Right.
So ballerina apologizes for her ruse, but tells him that she was forced to do it and the killer was looking for Mason.
Mm-hmm.
So you're like, what? So Rico's cell phone now buzzes, and then instantly loses signal.
Yeah.
CS tells him, you know, they have this back and forth about the cell phone signal and all this shit. But basically, coming out that CS tells him to try sending an email to the police.
Mm-hmm.
Rico says no, but decides to send an email to his parole officer instead.
You can't email the police?
Along with sending him pictures of one of the dead bodies. I guess it was Prom Queen, one of the dead bodies, or somebody else. Some dead body. Ballerina says she knows a way to an exit and heads off. Rico tries to stop her, saying, hey, it's safer if we stay in a group. But she's like, fuck no. She doesn't listen. She goes off by herself. Never seen again, I'm pretty sure. We cut to the local police. Actually, Shell, she might have lived. Who knows? We never see her again.
Yeah, I've never seen her again.
We cut to the local police investigating the bus crash now. Then right back to the group of three we left. They enter the steam-filled area that's lined with like these massive pipes on a wall. It kind of looks like a boiler room, I guess you call it. Mm-hmm. They hear footsteps coming their way, and then out from the steam stumbles Finkel, who collapses dead at their feet. They're like, well, that sucks. They keep moving on. Right. Enter another room. This one's dark and quiet, and just like the rest, has another dead body, just kind of propped, more dead bodies in it. The killer sneaks up behind CS and swings his ass, but somehow her fucking spider sense tingles and she senses it and she's able to duck out of the way at the last possible second. And the killer, it's like, fuck it, I missed her. And he like hits Mason in the face with the butt of the axe. Rico tries to tackle the killer, but he just gets an axe chop like, in the ribs or the arm or something like that for his trouble.
The arm.
Yeah, it's something side somehow. Yeah. It happens really fast. He's hacked, he's down. CS picks up the shotgun, shoots the killer in the back, who then flees the room flees into the darkness.
CS. Oh, Candy Striper.
Yeah, CS.
CS. What the fuck?
Yeah, Candy Striper.
Don't fuck me up like that, Marshall. You gotta
I specifically said I will be referring to her as CS from here on out.
Sorry, I guess I wasn't paying attention.
Mason gets up, takes the gun back from her, leads CS out of the room, leaving Rico's dead body behind. Now we cut to the parole officer who gets the email from Rico.
Yeah, Rico's dead body. He got hit in the arm with an axe.
Yeah, and he's like, well, he's dead. Let's go.
Let's play possum again, Rico.
He relays the information to someone else and tells him to send all the cars to the Fright Fest. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, CS and Mason return to the chapel to start looking for the secret passage, which CS finds almost immediately. Like, not much trouble. Kinda. It did not take a heart.
They'd be like, well, where's it at? I don't know. We should just improvise.
Yeah, they just start knocking along. And like 2 seconds later, like, oh, it's like, here it is.
Oh, that's right here. Oh, okay. It's behind this bookcase.
Exactly.
Sharky.
So,
it's a fucking Scooby-Doo episode.
It really is. Mason uses like the shotgun, like the butt shotgun, to start breaking through the thin wall. While we see the killer stitching himself up from his stitching up.
Is
his
that
shotgun.
What that was?
Yeah, I think it was him supposed to be stitching his shotgun. Because
I was
up.
Like, is he trying to pull the slug out? What is he trying to do there?
Yeah, it was stitching himself up.
Ugh.
So
gross.
Mason and CS come to another barricaded door, but this time there's like this really high window. It's like the top, very almost like the ceiling line, very high window. So it's probably one of those that you would see like it's probably like underground, but the window is like right at the ground level if you're outside type mm-hmm. thing. But they're Mason starts trying to open it. The killer shows up and knocks out Mason with a blow to the head, then turns his attention to CS. They struggle a bit. During this, CS is able to somehow shove the killer into the metal bed frame barricade, which turns out to also be electrified right. somehow. The killer gets shocked, falls to the floor. CS and Mason get up. She picks up the gun. Mason grabs the axe, and they walk off. Are you fucking kidding me, Mason? Yeah. Your whole point is, we gotta kill this guy, we gotta kill this guy, we gotta kill this guy. You have an axe and a shotgun. Uh-huh. You could easily kill this guy in a numerous amount of ways
Aaron, this is where Aaron would be like, you got the killer on the ropes.
Yep.
You got the killer on the ropes.
Exactly. That is a perfect.
And then you just walk away.
Yep.
What?
That's exactly what Aaron would say.
That's exactly what Aaron would say. And I'd have to agree with him at this point.
Yeah, I would
you
too.
You got an axe and a shotgun. If the point was to kill this motherfucker,
blow his
then
head
make
off.
Sure he's fucking
your
dead.
Your revenge for your parents,
right?
Blow his head off with the shotgun. Cut his head off with the axe.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Do both.
But don't just assume he's dead and walk
cut
away.
Cut his head off, then shoot it with the shotgun.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Anyway, of course, right as they walk off, we see the killer's hand twitch. Outside, all the local cops pull up, start breaking their way into the asylum, but they get stopped by the electrified barricade. Inside, Mason and CS manage to break into the control room. Crow plays innocent, thanks God for them being alive and making it, being able to make it to him.
Surprised they didn't ask one of them to open a beer for him.
Exactly. but he also starts rambling on about making a sequel to this, starring Mason as the big hero.
Yeah.
CS slaps him, and Mason talks about how people will never understand the evil that lives in this place, which, again, what the fuck are you talking about? The cops make it inside and are actually able to help another group of people out of the asylum. We see like a kind of a large group of 5-7 people being rushed out, which I kind of liked. Like, they still showed there were still more people in there, and they actually right. not everybody died, so I was like, okay, that's cool. They hear a scream, they rush off. They burst into the control room to find Mason standing over Crow with the axe above his head, about to bring it down on Crow, who we see now has like this large open gash on his chest, so it looks like he got chopped with the axe at least once already. Mason drops the axe, tells them they have the wrong monster. Back outside, we see more people fleeing the asylum in slow motion, followed by CS, who is being escorted out by a cop, and then Mason, who is now handcuffed, also being escorted out.
Rico is up
there. Yes, we see Rico standing next to one of the cop cars holding his bloody arm. So Mason and CS lock eyes for a moment before Mason is loaded into the back of a cop car. CS sits there watching Mason as the cop sits next to her, staring at her, which looks really fucking creepy because this whole thing is in slow motion.
It's like he's waiting for her to say something.
Or like turn to look at him, but she's like looking at Mason and he's just staring at her.
It's almost like he's questioning her, but he's not actually saying
anything.
He's
not, yeah. He's just standing, he's just sitting there staring at her. And it's in slow motion, so it's really,
it's real weird.
Real weird. Yeah. Anyway, we fade to black, roll credits. That is American Fright Fest, my Moon Goon friends.
So we don't. We're led to believe that the killer died from electrocution.
Yeah, but we obviously see dim because his fingers start twitching.
Okay. And Spencer, or wait, no. Who was the director again?
Spencer.
Yeah. Did we don't see him come out of the building?
Yeah, we never see him come out. But we, I mean, I assumed he lived. He wasn't killed. He lives. Okay. So. My assumption is ballerina chick lives, the killer lives, which they always do. They always fucking and Crow lived somehow, and I guess he gets away with it because I don't know because CS is still there. She could rat him out or something. But anyway, Mason gets locked up again. He gets arrested again.
Okay.
That's American Fright Fest, guys.
Very open ended.
Very open ended. A lot of questions, but like I said, very fast paced, very, very high body count, which leads us into our favorite kills.
Don't act like you didn't love it. Favorite kill.
So, Chris, lots of kills in this one. Like I said, a lot of kills,
but there weren't a lot of good kills.
No, it was this real fast paced.
You know what I mean?
Rapid
a lot of them
kills.
Happened in a montage. A lot of them happened early on, and then the one towards the end kind of sucked. I'm going to go with one of two. I would say, I think the very first kill of the movie was probably my favorite. With the father getting his head blown off. But only because it kind of started off and I was like, man, this could be all right. Okay. Here we go. But I think I'm actually going to go with the guard who tries to, tell him, oh, you can't go out here. And he like shoves the knife through his bottom of his chin and then cuts open his gut. Because that was pretty gory and it was a really good effect. So I think that was my favorite kill because even though there was a lot, I don't feel like there was a whole lot to choose from as far as like good kills. You know what I mean?
I'll agree with you. And honestly, I have the same thing. My favorite kill was that same one. The knife through the chin and then cuts open his stomach. That was my favorite one as well. And for exact same reasons, it's so everything else is rapid fire, or just people getting hacked up with an axe.
Right.
So that was real quick and simple. Let's move on to odds and ends.
Not only did they watch these films, they researched them too. Ugh, what is wrong with these guys?
All right, ratings. IMDb gives it a 3.9 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes, it's not even on the site yet. There's nothing there. Amazon gives it a 3.5 out of 5. Plot keywords. There were 9 plot keywords total. Nothing really fun or strange. So they are what they are. Trivia. None. Couldn't find anything. Budget. Unfortunately, could not find the budget. So there's no budget game. So odds end real fast
real
this
quick.
Week. But we do. That brings us to our 5-star reviews.
Oh, you gotta be shitting me.
Is this your guilty pleasure? 5-star reviews.
Who are these douchebags?
This is a whole family. The Hatley family, according to Amazon. Huh? After seeing so many disappointing horror movies on Amazon and others, like Netflix, I was seriously considering canceling my subscription. I am glad I didn't. This movie was the best horror movie I have seen on Amazon or any other subscription service in many years. Is it the best ever? Of course not. But after seeing the crap that's out there, it was well worth the time. Lots of blood, lots of kills, pretty realistic killer. Are there plot holes? Of course. Is there acting top rate? No. But the quality overall was there, and is definitely something you should take a look at if you're looking for a good horror movie, because there are too few these days. 5 stars.
I can't totally disagree with all of that.
Yeah. This one is weird. I don't quite get this, Ray, but from Craig Buchanan, just simply writes star. That's his whole review, is star.
So 5 stars, star.
Okay. Tony Gray writes, what a great ride. Novakovic spins a good tale. Spoiler alert, love the mayor's finale. One of the best. A great take on B-horror movies. I enjoyed Dylan Walsh's portrayal of his character. He killed more people than Cecil B. 5 stars. I don't know who Cecil B is.
I was wondering that too.
And last one from J.E. Garcia. This one's a little long. I even added this one down a bit.
Okay.
All right. Here you go. Since the bloody golden age of horror films in the late 70s and early 80s, I have gradually drifted away from this genre because I simply don't feel fear like I used to. The last time where I can honestly say I was horrified was Lars von Trier's Breaking the Waves, and that is not a horror film. This is why I can only give 4 stars to any film in the horror category. In the age of instant media and worldwide coverage of absolutely everything, now this is weird punctuation. He has everything with the exclamation point and then a comma.
So exclamation point comma.
That's not... That no. doesn't work that way, J.E. Garcia.
I think either my second grade son knows that. So
yeah. Okay. It seems like there is nothing that can truly shock in all these millennials. But American Fright Fest may just be the film that does accomplish this feat by blurring the lines between reality and fiction to the point where a young person may begin to contemplate the notion that perhaps what he/she is experiencing in a video game may be real and the game deaths, quote-unquote, are real people dying. In this sense, this movie is ingenious, and I really have to commend the director, writer, and cast. It would be the equivalent of kids finding out that the killing they are doing on Fortnite or Grand Theft Auto is actually real. Now, that may be the premise for another great horror film. Overall, the film is entertaining and does leave you with a mental buzz of what ifs that make you think twice about gratuitous violence worth watching. 5 stars.
Who wrote that?
J.E. Garcia.
J.E. Garcia. Now, if that's what the director or the writer was actually thinking of as far as the Fortnite thing, then maybe this movie is gold.
I doubt because it's been done a bazillion times before.
Perhaps maybe Mr. J.E. there is a little high on the shrooms himself. Yeah. the cocaine, perhaps. And needs to not overthink stupid shit.
Yeah.
But just...
I would love to know how old he is. Because he's talking about these millennials and them killing Fortnite. And like is he... He's obviously not...
He sounds kind of crotchety.
I wonder if he's older than... I'm wondering if he's like in his 40s or 50s. Like, yeah, he's got to be...
Just older than we are.
Yeah. I don't know. Now, I did write down a few 1- and 2-star reviews.
Okay.
Okay. I think the first two are... 1 stars, I think. From Kevin, please don't waste your time on this stupid movie. Simple enough.
Okay.
From Odin. So we have a divine.
Odin's son?
Odin.
Oh, just Odin.
Just Odin. This is Odin. This was an absolute terrible movie. An hour of my life I will never get back. 1 star. Now.
Well, he's wrong there because it was like an hour and a half.
That's right. From Warren. Even a fine actor like Dylan Walsh can't make silk out of a sow-like purse of a film like this. There is a reason you've never heard of this film. It is a very well-known secret. No one wants to admit they've actually watched it. It is that bad. Be warned. Shh. 2 stars.
Actually, I would like to admit I never watched it, but unfortunately I am talking about it on a podcast that everybody... Hopefully, we'll hear.
All right. So we've heard what other people have said. We've gone through the movie. Mm-hmm. Let's wrap this up with our final thoughts and takes on American Fright Fest. Chris, if you will.
All right, man. Well, okay. I thought that it had good potential.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The plot, not the whole plot, but I could see what they were trying to do. But the holes were like craters.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
So, like, I mean, it,
again, like we said, kind of through the whole thing, they didn't connect the dots. The kills were great. The blood was awesome. The killer itself was entertaining. You know what I mean? Not scary, but...
Yeah, like, not scary, but...
But he was crazy, and, like, he had his arsenal. He was, like, out there, and he was destroying shit. It just... The concept of, like, recording it and making it, like, the horror director, like, recording everything and, like, trying... I liked the idea, but they didn't bring it together. You know, they tried to tell that story in the beginning about the psychiatrist and his wife.
Yeah, we need to come back to that.
So you're figuring, okay, so Mason and the killer are brothers.
Yeah, that's maybe supposed to think that.
Right, but they don't ever really say that.
Nope.
And then there's never really a head-to-head with the brothers.
And even if they are brothers.
Even in that story, it said, you know, every year the mother calls her children back. Back to the asylum. That's part of that story that the back page bitch tells. Oh, okay. Yeah. So now they're coming back to the asylum, but that never comes to light. They never bring that whole thing back together.
Yeah, and even if they are supposed to be brothers, how would he know they're brothers? Because if he was given up for adoption, like, at birth, right. he wouldn't know this. And the killer probably wouldn't even know that.
And when Ballerina's like, he's looking for you, Mason.
Yeah.
So... Perhaps
the only thing I thought was, oh, is because you were on the
killer,
he knows you're
if
in
the killer
bus
showed
with him?
Up and killed was really there and actually killed his adopted parents, then the killer would know that's his brother, but they never bring that shit back together.
No,
and that's not only the other plot hole. I mean, it's just it.
No,
like,
I always thought that when that
place.
Mason, he's killing you, Mason. He's like, oh, because you are on the bus with him, I guess, and you can ID him. Is that the only reason? Because he knows who you are from the. That
maybe
because that's the one. It's so loosey-goosey. So
yeah, I felt like they were supposed to be the brothers. They were supposed to be the ones bringing them back to the asylum, but you never bring that whole thing back together. And it's just weird. At one point, it was kind of slapstick with the whole when they were taking the painkillers. Like there was a whole section there where it was kind of like supposed to be comical.
Yeah.
I think they just missed the mark, man. Okay. I feel like it was good. It had potential, but I got to say, so bad it's scary.
All right. So bad it's scary. I just remember another point I was going to bring up, was which now I'm forgetting about as I write some stuff down. You're talking about how they, you know, something about coming back to the asylum every year. Like, again, like, why would he... Or no. One, how would he know to come back to the asylum? And two, Mason says something. What was that?
Well, it's like the dead mother, when she's telling that story about the wife that killed the, and like, apparently her spirit calls her children back.
No, okay, here. Mason, when he's with Crow, he says something about how people will never understand the evil that lives in this place.
Right.
How would he know? Because he was never in this place. This place is, it's not like it shut down last week. This thing is supposed to be like shut down for... Like years and years, like he was never an inmate.
So
here.
There's no backstory.
Yeah,
there's no
nothing makes sense.
You know what I mean?
Now I agree with you. Obviously, agree with you on every point you made. But I think, despite all the flaws this movie has, plot hole wise and writing wise, which are a lot, and the loosey goosey wrap up of everything, I'm still gonna say so bad it's good, just because. It was a fun ride. It wasn't...
I'll give you that, I guess.
It wasn't so unwatchable, and
no.
It's so fast-paced, and like you don't... I will say, I think that helps this movie, because it doesn't give you a whole lot of time to, unlike us, to sit and really process the loose, the plot holes and all that, because it's constantly moving forward, and there's so much stuff going on. There's kill, 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 chaos. So your mind, you're not dwelling on those plot points until you're like, us two shitheads that are, you know... torturing ourselves by doing it,
right?
But I still think I had fun with it. It was the killer was different. He's fun. He wasn't like, you know, super scary, but he was just, you know, it was a fun ride. It could have been better. Yes.
Well,
has
this
thing been done before?
Like
it's been done bazillion times.
Like if you go back to Scare Zone, remember that one?
Scare Zone was great.
Now, how awesome was that movie?
For that was one of the better in like truly
kind of
independent.
The same concept. In a way,
well, I mean, killing in a haunted. I mean? But like every movie we've done this month, this has been the
way
month
more
of
fun.
Killing Who is that in a haunted house?
Hey, you're entitled to your opinion.
Yes, damn right I am.
I think you're wrong. And truthfully, that's all that matters.
Is that you think I'm wrong? Okay. But yeah, I say so bad. I think it's worth at least one watch.
It's worth a watch.
It's just a fun ride. It's certainly not. It's better than a lot of the other shit we've done on here lately.
I literally was confused the first time I watched. I was like,
"Yeah, don't think about going on." Yeah, if you just don't think about any of the plot or anything, just watch it. Turn your brain off and watch. That's how you'll enjoy this movie.
My problem is that I want to watch a good scary movie, and this asshole over here keeps making me watch these shitty ones.
Yeah, you can watch good ones on your own time. You can watch good ones whenever you want. All right, Moon Goons, that's going to wrap it up for this week. I want to say thanks again for Chris for sitting in for Aaron. Always appreciate. And you guys out there, remember, in the meantime, till we're back, watch more horror movies and remember to always keep it tight.
Peace.